the Mix Zone podcast by Infront Lab. On this podcast, we speak with sports and innovation leaders from around the world about creating sport experiences fans truly deserve. For those who are joining us for the first time, we're the digital and tech branch of Infront Sports. At the lab, we put the fans first and use technology to improve their experiences by helping rights owners meet their fans at every touch point along their journeys. We work with all sports-related industries, from data to content, and everything in between. And welcome to another episode of the Mix Zone podcast. I'm your host, Marav Sabir, and today we're going to be talking about esports. And more specifically than that, eFIBA, and about building communities around a game that so many of us love so much, and full disclosure, I'm a big fan of. So joining us from FIBA is Gustavo Arellano, Head of Commercial Development for the World Governing Body of Basketball. Gustavo, thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you first for the invitation. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to speak basketball and now doing this vertical to speak about esports and and share our journey in this exciting area.
It really is an exciting area and a growing area. And I had the pleasure of actually listening to you talk a little bit about it last year, last August, end of July, when we had met in Istanbul. But before we get into what you're doing, Gustavo, I'd like you to share a little bit about yourself. That way our listeners can hear a little bit about who you are, what you've done, and how you made your way to FIBA.
Great. Thank you. I'm originally from Venezuela. I've been living in Switzerland for the last 10 years, and the last those 10 years, 9, working for the International Basketball Federation. I was lucky enough to start in the marketing team, and I had the opportunity to work in different areas, such as business development, sport, accounting management, and then also going through marketing operations through events. So I had the opportunity to know better the different stakeholders around basketball and to understand better the ecosystem. And that gave me the opportunity for the last 4 years. I did a new department called business development, which it started just before the pandemic. And one of the main projects that fall into this new responsibility was the development of esports. So it's one of the projects. Business development in our organization means new revenue streams and means new opportunities to generate not only profitability for the organization, but also to generate promotion, to elevate our brand, and to generate value for our stakeholders. But then eFIBA, and it's in this case esports, was one area that we tried in the past as an activation a few times, but the pandemic was the right time to accelerate it and then fall into my responsibilities. And then now 4 years after, we have gone through an interesting journey.
So tell us about this journey. Like you said, you know, business development started about 4 years ago, right before the pandemic started. So the pandemic probably kept you really busy, because this is the real time you have to find new revenue streams, as you mentioned, with basketball having stopped for a while, fans being at home. Tell us a little bit more about this journey and how you came to decide on the strategy for eFIBA and what it is today in the past year and a half that it's been running.
Great. And the first part, we're very transparent on how we started. We didn't have a strategy when we started.
That's very brave for you to say.
Yeah. We needed to understand what we were going through. And that's why we framed our first initiative, and that was our suggestion on how to deal with this. Again, and the pandemic gave us that space, was to test, was to pilot. And we had an idea. We thought it will go into a certain direction, but our intention with the pilot was to listen. And this was the first time, and at least in a project like this, when we didn't have so much pressure at the time, where we were listening to our stakeholder, in this case, National Federation, because those federations were the ones who started with their own initiatives, were the ones who started. There is an opportunity to organize international events because of what they were seeing in their own home countries. So we started in that way with a pilot and with two main our mantra was, let's be open, let's not copy paste what we do in traditional basketball, let's hear what the community have to say, let's hear what the federations need in order to create, and then let's do a test to make sure that this help us to understand better what we need to do.
So how did you do that? Because we're not talking about 2-3 federations. There's multiple federations here at play. Each one's probably doing something very different. What did this communication look like? How do you go about that?
We created a collaborative platform, which in this case was just emails and workshops. It's not something tech and something super nice.
We just old school. I think you can call that old school.
Exactly. All very old school. We send an open communication to our federations, and the first 16 that show up created a nice environment to share what they were doing, what they knew, and to introduce in this conversation the people who were the experts, the gamers, the players, the ones who were there.
Part of these 16.
Sorry?
Who were part of these 16? If you can tell us.
Yeah, the 16 first federation, I remember. I can mention a few. I don't have the full list, but we can.
I wouldn't expect you to remember comments. All of them.
Yeah, but we had Latvia that they were doing things. We had Spain. We had Italy. We had, of course, USA was active, but they were not at that time organized to have a league because they had already a league with the NBA 2K League. But then we had Brazil and Argentina. They were active, and they were the Philippines. They were always forefront on these type of activities, and I think the conversation started around them. Cyprus also, I remember, was very active, and those were the federation. And I remember the leaders from these federations that they were asking us, guys, there is something happening. Let's do it. And when we open this communication, we're looking to do a test. We're giving you the opportunity to select your national team and to compete for the first time online. Then we created this community platform through different workshops that when we start to listen. And the idea of the workshop was not for us to impose calendar or schedules or how it will work. We say, guys, what do we need? Then things came to roll out that everybody who's gamer, they also work, so we cannot play during the day. It's difficult to play weekends, so we should alternate. We should be careful if we play during the week, because of this shift. It should be better if we condense everything during the weekend. We need to know long in advance. The game needs to have enough time because of the online setup takes a lot of work that we were not aware. So the calendar is not as we do a normal basketball event. So these kind of things made us understand that if we want to be doing this, it cannot be look like or cannot be similar to how we do other physical basketball events. So that gives us first the flexibility and also the, I would say, collaborative approach, because when this started, the federations that were more advanced, they were able to share how they have done things with the ones that are just willing to start, but they didn't have the how. So the way of starting the process didn't came really from us, but came from the ones, and again, I'm referring to federations who had already some knowledge on how to contact to the community, how to bring the players, how to communicate with them, and what to tell them to join in this initiative.
So before we get into the initiative itself, into the tournament, I'm curious, because so many of these countries that you mentioned as part of the 16 are very, very different. So when you're having these workshops, when you're listening to them, they're listening to one another. Were more of what they were suggesting and telling you, was it similar to one another? Was it very different from one another? I'm assuming they also had the opportunity here to learn from one another and implement things that they may have not done in the past.
Yeah. And we thought at the beginning, first to answer the question, they were more similar than we thought. Before, we expected some level of differences because of time zones, because of how close they are to the game or not. Exactly. And it was not like that at the beginning. They were all shared by the same. The community was very homogeneous in that sense, in the way of how they play and how they communicate. But the most relevant part on that, there's something that we tried to share because we were a bit surprised by this. It was a very good surprise, is that this group of people were very collaborative. When we thought that, and the first example we have, the first tournament, 16 federations, Italy were going through the toughest moment in their lockdown. They were not able even to share cables between neighbors because they were going through a very bad time.
Like the beginning.
And
the
federation was very willing to do something, but they didn't know how. They were not clear on how to do. And I remember that other federations in this meeting supported. We know a guy who is Italian. We know another person who can do it. We know how it is. It was very collaborative. and Italy won the first tournament.
Wow.
Without really knowing and having, they had only goodwill, but not mm-hmm. really the structure. And at the end, they won. So at the end, yes, the others who helped, I'm sure, were not very happy that from sport point of view, they didn't make it. But there was not that sentiment. That level of the competitive side is there. Of course, when you play for your national team, there is a lot at stake. But seeing how collaborative it was, and seeing how they were supporting each other, also, of course, COVID times also, it's a relevant context in this sense. But that was also what made us fuel ourselves to say, okay, we have something, because it won't depend on only on what we will be doing, but also on how these groups of people will help to distribute the message, to share the message, and to make sure that this will work. Because if it's only us pushing from country to country, it will have been impossible, just impossible.
So what does this tournament look like? Like we mentioned, you had the first first two seasons were in 2023. What did these look like?
We had the pilot was three tournaments, and we had regional tournaments, and they were all online. Now we had season one end of 22, and then 23 we had the first full season. Okay, mm-hmm. so far we have done five events, six if we count the Olympic participation. But then in these events it had evolved a lot at the beginning, and again, coming from the idea of not to copy paste, the way of playing have changed a lot. First, we started with group phases and similar to basketball normal.
Like an event that you would have to in person.
Yeah. And then we started to implement better best of threes, best of five, best of seven, depending on connectivity, depending on the region and the amount of teams. So that have evolved and it's not standard. But right now, what we have standardized is the calendar, in the way that we start with online qualifications at the regional level, because from geographical reasons, you cannot play with people that's playing too far because of the land, the lack of the connection.
Mm-hmm.
So that will give a competitive advantage to the one who's closest to the server where you are playing to. So that's why we have to divide the country in the world in regions, and then based on those regions, people play. So we have the European Conference, we have the North American Conference, South America, Southeast Asia, Asia, and Oceania, and Africa. And based on those seven conferences, we invite all the teams to come to play. We have normally the standard season from last year will be 6 weeks of competitions. So during 6 weeks, they will competing online to find the best teams to fight for the title on the regions, and those titles in the regions will give them the ticket to qualify for a World Cup. The World Cup is physical, so it's people same place, face to face with the console in their hands and with the controls in their hands. And this is what we say the evolution of the event. It's online is one type of product, and LAN is the best version of it. The idea is to establish this. Or continue establishing this as a inclusive platform, meaning that every federation could sign up whenever they want. So this is we're still in that stage, but then now we are evolving the competition system to make sure that the more developed federation will have more games, and the less developed ones still can compete, but they will remain at a certain level of the competition without necessarily to have divisions that we're not there yet. And what we have seen is that every year more and more federations wants to jump in the competition. We started with 16, like I say, but then the second edition was 32, then 43, then 64. The last version, we had 65 federations involved for a season. So we expect this year to have a similar number and continue growing from that number to keep adding more and more countries.
So from the players' perspective, we'll call it the national federations who are joining in and playing and wanting to take part in this, you're obviously growing, but there's two sides to this, because obviously there's players and then there's the side of the viewers. And as we see over the past couple of years, that viewership of gaming and esports is just growing and growing, especially with technology now being able to host these games live for fans to view all over the world. Are you also seeing growth in the viewership of the tournaments as you go along?
Yes and no. And this is one of the biggest lessons that we had. first to understand how gaming platforms, in this case, very simple, YouTube and Twitch, will promote better certain type of games will depend on how much content you produce. In our case, having a limitation in the calendar, that because we're not a tournament that is all year round, we are on from October to December, more or less. So we have 9 months of the year when we're not producing content, or not at the level, or not as relevant as those 3 months. Mm-hmm. So we found out in the first season that the only way for us, the only way, one of the ways for us to go to more eyeballs will be to rely on the people who's actually producing content all year long of 2K. Because for us, it will be turned on 3 months, then turned off, and then the platform, I would say, punish you. It doesn't allow you to promote what you're doing because you are off for such a long time. So what we did in the second season, and so far will be now our strategy for distribution, is to adopt in key countries different streamers that normally post content on 2K, that they're normal, they have an audience on 2K, mm-hmm. and then will be technique, and this is not necessarily exclusive. We could have two in Turkey, we have two people in the Philippines. It's not, we're still very open on how to do it, but the idea is that we will leverage on their community for them to share the message of what's happened. So that made us grow at least 60-70% from season one to season two. And that made us also understand that until we have a year-long product, we will need to work with people that has a year-long content production system. And at the end, we're giving more content, relevant content, because every time that a flag is involved, the content remains relevant. But in that process of learning on how to get to more people, we got that, that new way of implementing, I would say, I don't want to call it a full strategy, but it's a new way of distributing. That's one.
It's a never-ending learning education system, we'll call it that way, as everything keeps changing in terms of technology as well.
Exactly. And then in order to serve better the viewers, we had two types of viewers. We had the viewers that are there for the show, for the entertainment, for the fun, and we expected that this will be the biggest amount of people. And this is literally the one that is more difficult to reach because we are fighting with other more cool stuff that are happening in Twitch and YouTube at the same time.
There's sort of like the casual viewer and the casual fans, as we would call them in the industry.
Exactly. And this is the most difficult one and technically the one who will make the numbers. This is the group of people that will stop by and stay. And on this group, we have been making progress, having a face. We have a group of casters that have been very, very committed to entertain more than focusing on the sporting part or the competitive side, but actually to create a show. And on top of that, to keep the engaging way of communicating. That, everything to learn for us. And then the other group is this core basketball fan, super die hardcore with their flag in their chest, and they will see full 20 minutes of avatars going up and down in the court just because their flag is there beating a neighbor country or beating for the first time a country from another region. And those are the ones that we are now pushing back to the federation. So now our proposal is we take care of the show, we take care of these clips, these sections that of the best part of the game. So we jump from quarter four on one game to quarter four on another game, not to see the full length of the game, to try to keep not necessarily highlights, but good parts of the game, because it's like a carousel happening.
Like a condensed game sort of situation.
And that will be our focus. And then we push the federations to capture those diehard fans that they will want to see the 20 minutes of their national team, and they will wait. They will not like to see what's happening with other countries. The show is not that relevant. So this was appreciated by federations. And in the last season, 17 of the 60 actually had a system for them to redistribute the content. And for a first level exercise was very positive. We thought it would be less. So now we're aiming to keep serving them and say, okay, your games are yours. This is for you to explode. There are different ways to do it. And a few of them have been very, very creative. And we will be talking about the international setup. We will be creating the conversation around the show, around the idea of story behind, but not necessarily on the flag and on the winning component. That gave us positive results in this season last year, and we would like to continue exploring that direction in the future.
What are some of these creative ways that you mentioned that they're using the content to get the fans to draw more attention? Because obviously it's a very exciting tournament, but still a very new tournament that, like you're saying, a lot of the casual fans may not know of, but it's a good way to also take casual fans and make them into the hardcore fans.
Yeah. It's French Federation, for example, they're always very good communicating. They set up their own studio and they have experts in the field talking about it. So they have their own show going on. So the game was happening and the game will happen, but they will have a very interesting talks, very hardcore debates before and after the game. So the way of, and this in a very French way, in a very well-produced way, was a very good show. So even if you were, the game was there, but not they were not necessarily waiting for the game. They had a very good production, good setup, and a good conversation. I remember, not for the last season, but for previous season, the Spanish Federation bring actual basketball commentators, the voices of the national team, to be the voices of the IFIBA tournament. So the people who were turning on in Spanish, they would recognize the voice of these people and give it a not only a level of credibility, but also how you listen a game. And for a Spanish commentator, is very different from how you will listen it in Brazil or how you listen it in Asia. So that Spanish touch with a proper commentator that people will recognize gave interest to a lot of people that were not know that Spain had e-basketball.
And so this probably, kind of things a lot. It probably brought more people because if you're a very well-known basketball commentator, you have your own following. And as soon as you post one thing that says, hey, I'll be broadcasting IFIBA game during the tournament between Spain versus whoever it may be, post the link on your social media, that can also ignite an entire following.
Yeah, and I remember, I'm a Spanish speaker, I remember when I was checking the game, I would prefer to listen to Spanish, Tom, because of all the emotion and all. When you have a commentator working on a game that your national team is involved, the passion and the high tones are very different from when it's a neutral commentator, because it has to be neutral on our side. So when you add all those components in the broadcast, makes a difference for the players. Federation normal way to promote, they look to involve their stars, their traditional basketball players to say hi to the IFIBA team, to bring this type of players into the scene. That normally works, but this is the very difficult to accomplish. To get the timing, the proper setup, the agendas is challenging. Few of them have tried, few of them have succeeded doing it. But again, this one, I will say the traditional way of promoting, these others like France or Spain were very good, and they will continue, I would say, they will continue bringing ideas to push for their national team.
So you're really giving the national teams the reins to bring in their crowds and bring in their fans. And I'm curious if you yourselves at FIBA have gotten any sort of reactions from fans, if the national teams have gotten reactions from fans that then they have shared with you to better understand what it is that they're enjoying, what it is that they may be wanting, missing, because at the end of the day, they're still fans from all over the world who may want different things. They're rooting for their own national federation, but they want to watch in different ways. They want to experience in different ways. They want to come physically to events. How is it that you're learning about your fans and who's watching you to continue to improve from season to season?
I think that the advantage of doing it in this way, distributing digitally and having Twitch and YouTube as our main platform, is that we are constantly reading and consuming how people react. Mm-hmm. And to give you an example, many of the in the previous season, a lot of the content that was produced post game, it was connected to how the people react to it. So one example is that we had this team from the Philippines being very hardcore fans from basketball,
very connected to the national fans. Team. They love huge, basketball.
Huge followership. Filipino e-basketball team is actually very good. They perform very well. And they had this team when one of the guys very, very shy. Very, very shy. Mm-hmm. But then it's one of the best players of the team. And people were pushing in the in the comments. We want to hear him. We want comments from him. We know he cannot speak. And the guy was really shy, and we didn't want to push the guy to make an interview because he is very shy. But then it came out of the idea because one guy, he did an amazing play, and someone posted a message saying, this guy for president. And then people, you know, nice idea, and then everybody, this guy for president, president. And then our content team was just creating a presidential campaign for the guy. We just did like a line of Photoshop sweaters and things. And the guy was so happy. And then he did the interview. And that was the biggest moment of the broadcast, and not necessarily the moment when the guy won. It was this moment when the guy finally took the mic. He said just, "I love you all." He didn't say more. He just said, "I love you all." And then all the casters wearing a sweater with their face on it. So these type of things that help us to react, that made us react, it's possible because our team is there just reading and trying to adapt. We don't have, we have kind of a script on what it should be or what should be happening, but it's the game of what's going on in the, while the competition is happening, which adapts us not only to produce content, but also to speak back to the people. And this is something that different from the standard way of producing the game. In this case, now we need to have our casters needs to be very good at receiving information and reacting time. And for this, it's a very different profile. And that's why I've been taking us longer to set up this team who will be facing the community and reacting on the community, because this is not, and you know very well, this is not just calling the games. This is a conversation that happens. And to answer your question, you need the right team willing to continue the communication instead of just follow the script.
So you mentioned you're streaming the games on YouTube and on Twitch, but in terms from a technology standpoint, everything behind the scenes, what goes into producing these tournaments? Like you mentioned, we're talking about servers, it's global, it's teams competing against one another. It's not someone sitting playing against someone who's in a house down the block from them, making it much easier. Like there's a lot that goes into this behind the scenes. And of course, later on when you get to the stages where it's physical, are there people who come watching live? Then it adds another element into it that's more like the traditional one where you're creating these events with people in attendance.
Yes, and the first part for the online, the challenge is the connectivity. Although the world have improved a lot with the internet, we still know that it could be that you are playing and then you have you are out because you got a down a connection and then you're out of the game. So how you set up the rules to allow those type of situations? So that is a challenge that we have been learning. What is the best way? How other organizations do it? What would be fair? Repeating the game is giving another chance, or how this could not be used in a competitive advantage? Because if I'm losing, I just disconnect. This conversation is very challenging, and that we thought we will have more problems with this, but then the community remains being very collaborative and being very honest. And maybe now, because we're still starting, maybe later we'll be a bit more competitive. But so far, we haven't had bad issues with that. And this goes along with the idea that we just receive a lot of signals. Then we have to redistribute those signals. And for that, there is a technical setup that is important. Because imagine that for every game, you need to receive two signals from each console that is broadcasting. In this case, that you need to digest the signal and then redistribute the signals not only for our stream, but also for the federations and the co-streamers. So there is a lot of technical setup and overlaying signals, and that's a challenge to produce. But I would say we're very happy on how it worked on our first season during the first 6 weeks last year. A lot of learning in terms of where is the best way and how is the worst way. Of course, we ensure, and there is a lot of setup and we'll say trials that we do with the captains and the people who will be sending the signal to make sure that the signal is at the right level, that we're getting it. There is a lot of pre-work before that be on the stage. And then when we move to the final stage, it's totally different. It's completely different. Mm-hmm. The challenges are not related to internet because the connectivity normally is there and that's more easy to handle. It's more about the behavior of the players. It's face-to-face setup. It is about the the time that might be happening to get all the setup correctly, because again, it's not about the online, it's about the game itself, on how all this happens. And when it's live, when it's online, you can just change the game, or you can change to speak, make the caster to speak, and it's normal in the esports world. But when it's live, every second counts, and it's a bit more challenging. But it's a different event. We when we do it online, it's exciting and it's competitive. But when it's live, it's a different,
a whole
different
other level.
Yes, the level of energy, these guys transform in a different person when they're competing. And the fact that we try to do this face-to-face, the type, we try to keep it respectful and go through the certain lines, but the trash talk that happens, very basketball trash talk. It's not mean, it's in your face, not in my house. It's this type of talk when these guys that play
ball. It's Luka Doncic while throwing a free throw.
A lot of talk, and don't forget that in this game, for the ones who are not aware of the competitive version of it, we play 5v5. So it's not 1v1 like normal video games. This is team video game, so you have five players on one side, five players on one side. So therefore, the basketball IQ needs to be very high. It's not the same to be good or skillful with one avatar, but be the center of your team and play the role of being the center, being the forward, being the power forward. Adopting your position and having the chemistry in your team plays a different role. And when you see that happening live,
to individual athletes and individual sports versus team sports, you got to learn to play together.
Exactly. And you can see that when we show the audio about how they speak, normally they speak a language, but when we can do it in English, and the level of conversation, it's a conversation that you could hear on a court, on a basketball court. So that adds a lot of value to the product from basketball. It's not only about being skillful with your fingers, as a lot of people simplify the exercise, but it has a lot of basketball IQ to be playing on.
You said you don't want to copy paste from anyone else. You're trying to learn, but you're still, I'm assuming, taking a look at what others are doing, learning, paying attention to trends. What are some things that you learned or trends that you're watching at the moment from seeing how others are doing?
Maybe trend. Well, that's it's more and more being present. It's about being more and more in the game. It's instead of having 1 weekend focusing World Cup mode when we have everyone in the weekend, the trend is how much time I can be present in the calendar, how many weeks I can be playing. If I need to have a preseason, during season, and postseason, as longer time I can produce content that will become more relevant. That's a solid trend, and we are slowly going there, because again, we had to start small, and the property will continue growing, and that's one thing. Then on the other side is that again, looking for these differentiators and not to copy paste, at least not even from others, but also not from traditional basketball. Last year we took a risk and we implemented something called skill booster, meaning that you will get extra points while you're playing if you achieve certain things. Could be the first team who achieved 100 points, the team who got less than 15 points against in a quarter, the first team who gets 10 triples on a quarter. These points will affect your ranking, and that we will give you other things to create a conversation, and will make players keep focusing on the winning the game, but in a way that their way of doing it will be compensated. So we were scared at the beginning, be completely transparent. So let's test how it will be. And the community received it very, very positively. Established gamers and everybody, not everybody, but they will say people coming from the 2K world and coming from other sports, they say this is a good way to keep the ball moving. So right now we're not stuck to do it in one way. We could keep testing. But was so successful that we had to adapt the rule to continue empowering this direction. And we will continue. Now we have a team thinking what will be the skill booster, how we want to implement it, because it got a very good reception. And again, when you talk to these to a purist basketball person, this can be perceived as noise. This is noise. what you're talking about. You're using stats to make something different. But for the gamers, was very good, and if for them was good, they were having fun and people were talking about it. That's the best that we can ask. So we will continue, and the idea is to continue taking this type of risk to understand. Maybe one of them it won't work, and then we need to reinvent ourselves. And I think that the fact that we have this flexibility will help us to adapt better to what people see.
And Gustavo, one last question for you. What would Gustavo of today say to Gustavo 4 years ago in terms of tips for what he should be doing to get this off the ground, or if it's, you know, giving tips to others who are embarking on their own journey to create e-series and e-sports series? I know it's a tough question.
No, it's sad.
I know that's probably a list that's running through your mind at the moment. But what would your tips be for yourself back then?
I think the first message would be believe it will happen. Because 4 years ago, we were told many times that this was impossible because of the alignment of stakeholders. Talking about NBA, 2K League, 2K as a publisher, International Federation, FIBA, and National Federations. From stakeholders' point of view, it was a very challenging one. And 4 years ago, we were full of goodwill, but it could be that it will not have happened. So I will say first, trust the process. And second, I will say that it is very important to aim for a long-term vision, because we started knowing that we didn't have strategy. After the three pilots, we set up a strategy, and we said, okay, the first thing is to have a proper product, then demonstrate that this product is feasible and stable, and then scale it. So right now we are in the stage two, and I will say, if I will talk to myself before, 4 years ago, I would say, when that strategy is set up, make sure that those steps goes one by one. Because right now we were in the middle of the first season looking to scale. We wanted to go to more federations. And at the end, to go to more federations needs a bigger team and need a bigger setup. And we need to go step by step. We'll say that's the current conversation. And now, 4 years ago, I will not think that we will be having soon a conversation about the Olympic esports games. And now that we will be discussing seriously about how this platform can actually serve existing sporting organizations. And again, we still see it as a platform. We're not, it's not only an activation, but we still see it as a platform to talk to a community that loves basketball, and they started to love basketball in a different way. We always say, when people challenge us, you are the International Basketball Federation, you don't need to be promoting people playing from a sofa. And there is a point, and we need to work on how to bridge this with physical activity. That's coming a bit later. But for us, we understood that there is a lot of people that they fall in love with the game, not with a ball in their hands, but with a console, with what, watching TV, watching their mobile. They love basketball. They breathe basketball. It is our role to welcome them, the basketball, and not to step aside, because if you don't get a ball or if you didn't play in the court, then you are outside. We need to remain open and inclusive. And for this group of people, this is the work that we are doing.
Gustavo, I think that's the perfect way to end this podcast episode, and really making sure that this is a calling for everyone who loves basketball in one way or another, whether it's holding a ball in their hand, watching from the couch, playing and holding the console. Everyone loves the sport in a different way, and it's incredible to hear how welcoming it's become.
Thank you very much for the invitation. Happy always to discuss, and thankful not only for the people working hard in the organization, but also for all the federations that have been made this possible. And now we are starting the journey. Now we need to continue. It's a long one.
Well, good luck with your journey.
Thank you very much.
That wraps up this episode of The Mix Zone by InfrontLab. I'm Marav Sevier. You can find me and InfrontLab on LinkedIn. Don't hesitate to reach out and chat with our team about sports tech solutions or just last night's game. Enjoyed the episode? Let us know your thoughts on the podcast, and don't forget to rate us. We'll see you next time.